For obvious reasons, Junagadh and Hyderabad were of considerably more strategic significance to India than Kashmir. Handing either to Pakistan would have involved creating dangerous enclaves in the heart of the country. To avoid this trap, Jawaharlal Nehru had promised a referendum in Kashmir and needed Abdullah to win it. Tolerating the Kashmiri leader's authoritarianism was the necessary price. But the deal wouldn't last very long. The way crops need sunlight to ripen for harvesting and the gardens need water for maintaining their greenery, the Kashmiri leader Chaudhry Ghulam Abbas Khan proclaimed in 1935. Likewise, to keep a nation alive, the blood of martyrs is a prerequisite. 4 years earlier, calls for jihad against Kashmir's Hindu rulers had escalated into large-scale violence. Following the killing of protesters by the Maharaja's police, mobs attacked Hindu-owned properties in Srinagar. Like in the rest of India, religious nationalism had cast its ugly shadow over Kashmir. By 1938, Abdullah had spearheaded efforts to heal the communal divisions. He renamed the Muslim Conference as the National Conference, and Hindus were allowed membership. However, faced with growing challenges to his popular legitimacy after 1951, Abdullah turned again to ethnic religious chauvinism. The breaking point with Nehru came amid a movement led by the Praja Parishad, seeking full integration of Kashmir into India. In a 10 April 1952 speech in Ranbir Singhpura, Abdullah suggested it was becoming impossible to, I quote, convince the Muslims of Kashmir that India does not intend to swallow them up. For months, tensions with Pakistan had threatened to escalate into war. To Nehru, it became clear that Abdullah's rebellion could not be tolerated. "I am afraid Kashmir is heading for an adverse direction," Nehru warned in a 28 June 1953 letter. Following failure to secure a rapprochement with Abdullah, the Intelligence Bureau facilitated an inner party coup, which deposed him in September 1953. The regime of Bakshi Ghulam Muhammad came to power on the back of a unanimous vote of confidence from Jammu and Kashmir's Constituent Assembly, many of whose members were released from prison that very day so they could vote. Early in 1954, the Union government restricted Kashmir's special status by passing constitutional amendments that cut back the state's autonomy. Long before Kashmir's special status ended, 260 of the 395 articles in the Indian Constitution had already become applicable to Jammu and Kashmir. The remaining 135 had identical provisions in the Jammu and Kashmir Constitution itself. Kashmir's political destiny had been decided without a single meaningful election. Bakshi's own government collapsed in 1963 after large-scale anti-India violence exploded in the wake of the disappearance of a relic from the Hazratbal shrine in Kashmir. Later, the National Conference was folded into the Congress, ceding the opposition space completely to the secessionists. Frida Houlston, the author of that Naya Kashmir manifesto, abandoned her communism as well as Kashmir. She would end her life as a Buddhist nun. To some, it may have seemed a kind of penance, to others, evidence of supreme disillusion. Following the events at Hazratbal, large-scale anti-Hindu riots broke out in East Pakistan, historian Mayurakshi Das records. The large-scale exodus of Hindu refugees from East Pakistan led to retaliatory communal violence in Kolkata. From 1964 onwards, the tempo of communal violence escalated steadily across India. In Ahmedabad, individuals charged with the murder of Muslims were publicly facilitated by leaders of the Hindu Mahasabha. A crisis in Indian secularism was building up. The Kashmiri politician Prannath Bajaj wrote that Kashmiri Muslims began increasingly questioning their future and security in India. Looking at the crisis of 1963, Nehru concluded it was time for India to, I quote, reconsider the basic premise and structure of Kashmir policy. However, little was actually learned. Imprisoned in 1953, Abdullah was released in 1958 and then returned to jail. The National Conference was pushed into a shotgun alliance with the Congress in 1974 after Prime Minister Indira Gandhi signed an agreement with the Kashmiri leader. Later, former Chief Minister Farooq Abdullah rigged the elections in 1987 with catastrophic consequences. As Bazaz had warned, Indian authoritarianism had ended up giving legitimacy to Pakistan and Islamists. For 4 years from 1999 to the time of Vajpayee's speech, India and Pakistan were locked in a stage of savage confrontation over Kashmir. A staggering 2,125 Indian Security Force personnel were killed in those 4 years, more by far than the 521 soldiers the country lost during the Kargil War. Thousands of civilians and jihadists were also killed. To Vajpayee, it seemed that a fair election could provide a foundation for peace. Even as he began covert negotiations with Pakistan's military ruler, General Pervez Musharraf, the People's Democratic Party was installed in power in Kashmir. Even though all the elements for peace seemed to be in place, there was one hole. Kashmir's political system had long ago lost legitimacy in the eyes of the Kashmiri people themselves. The peace process would finally collapse in 2016 when jihadist social media icon Birhan Wani's death sparked off an uprising in southern Kashmir. That would lead on all the way to the imposition of President's rule, Pulwama, and of course, the crisis of Balakot. Today, successful peace building in Kashmir needs the restoration of legitimacy to its political institutions. That means the government needs to announce a timeline for holding elections and reinstitute genuinely democratic government. Kashmir's people need to be empowered to build their own new Kashmir, not have it erected around them. I'm Praveen Swami and I'm a contributing editor at The Print. Thank you for watching Security Code.